And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Independence of me, Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello. It's still dark outside. Man, you know, it's, shorter days. But then it's going to be, you know, I have to now do the show at 7. I won't get to do it at 6. Oh, darn. So that'll be someday. When is daylight savings anyway? Do you know? Next weekend, not this weekend. Okay, so next weekend, not this weekend, but it won't change for anybody else, just Arizona. Okay, now we had a few days ago, we had scheduled Frederick Heffermel, and he got the times wrong or so. Anyway, so we got it all worked out with him. He's from Oslo, Norway. What? Oslo. He's in Oslo, Norway. Okay. So Oslo. All right. Oslo. Sorry. I can't read. All right. So Oslo, Norway. He's coming in. We're going to talk about the Nobel Peace Prize, the Nobel Prizes. Do they mean anything anymore? And it used to be, everything's a brand, you know? It's a coffee in my giant Pork Fest 10 mug. Okay. It used to be, when I was young, you know, you'd learn about Nobel in school, you know, who he was and so on. And how I remember the story, it went like this. Nobel invented dynamite, you know, explosive. I think it was dynamite. And he was really big. I don't know, he invented it. He made a bunch of money on it. Anyway, you know, the war was, you know, it's always good to have war because, you know, money for war. And what happened is somebody did an obituary on him in the newspaper. They thought he was dead, and they wrote the obituary. So he's sitting there reading his own obituary. He's like, what? You know, and the obituary was, you know, kind of described him the merchant of death. He was the death guy, death and war and death. So, excuse me, Gusty. Oh, a triple. Oh, excuse me. So what happened was he saw his obituary, and it referred to him as a merchant of death, and he's always, you know, he supplied the war machine, and it upset him. He goes, that's what I'm going to be remembered for? You know, he goes, well, I got some money, and I can make sure that I'm remembered for, like, something else. So he created the Nobel Prizes. And I don't know if they had all of them. Of course, he put it in the trust of somebody being trusted with trusting, you know, of his name. And when you got Barack Obama getting the Peace Prize, you know you got issues. And so we're going to find out all that. That'd be interesting. Drew Phillips in the next hour, you know, Bitcoin not bombs, you know, bitcoinsnotbombs.com. Excuse me. And he has hoodies for the homeless. They've been doing that a lot. And it's free advertising. Here, there's a nice fleece hoodie. And it's big and orange and has Bitcoins Not Bombs on it. So, you know, it's good advertising. They've been doing that in Northern California, I think, focused there. We'll find out more about that. And we're going to talk about with Drew Phillips, Silk Road, Litecoin, Bitcoin Friday. Now, we're going to be working on Black Market Friday. Hopefully, it's kind of overlapping what he's thinking about there. And the one thing that's interesting, he's working with Davi Barker. Davi is going to be, one, he's going to be a speaker at the Freedom Summit. But we're going to have him here in about 3 weeks. And we're going to fly him out. Oh, yeah, that's another thing. Did you get Davi's birthday and stuff? I sent it in an email. He sent it to me. Did you already get the tickets and stuff? No. That's for him coming in November, middle of November. He's going to be here at the discussion group. David Dorn and I working that out. Go ahead and start checking on that. Let's do that. Take care of that today. And, the discussion group's going to pay for it, or at least some of it, and whatever, we'll work it out. So that's why I'm glad I reminded myself of that, because what we're doing is we're bringing Davi in to speak all about just Bitcoin to a bunch of old farts that, man, they are just now. And there's so many interesting things that are happening around it. The interesting things about Bitcoin is not, that it's jumped from nothing to, a couple hundred dollars a piece. That's not the point. The point, they keep going, they say, Ernie, I can't believe you're just pushing it. You can't, and I'm going, they go, how much time do you spend? On 1 to 10, I'm going like 0.5. I go, that's not the point. You guys are missing the freaking point. The point is, it's an alternative to the Federal Reserve that's embraced by, Generation Next, at least heard of it, know what it's about. But that's not even the point. It's that ones and zeros, an encryption algorithm, blah, 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 part. That's very convenient to use, by the way, and can go across international borders and has no central banking and has no, political tie of the whatever, and they can seize and take and do and this and what. None of that means nothing. The important thing to me is that, just vaporware has more value than the U.S. dollar. I mean, does that even, does that blip on your cortex at all? That, all of a sudden, for all the reasons that you hate and just despise this kind of regulatory control and just printing. I mean, there's no value in it. And the world's going to repudiate the dollar. I mean, you can see it coming. It's like big, giant, boiling storm clouds on the horizon. Hell, it ain't on the horizon anymore. Freaking down the block. That they would take, if you would go to someone and say, oh, yeah, in the future, they'll just, it's on the internet. They'll just make it up. It'll come, and you'll describe Bitcoin or what? Well, of course, anybody that's used it or knows, a little something about it, you can see that it has some value. There's a lot of things to it. And if it, it can be safe and secure and limited, it may have, and secret, and all this other stuff, decentralized. I mean, you go, wow, that sounds like cash. Well, that's exactly what they've been shutting down, is the use or how it acts like cash. You can't get your cash out. You can't send your cash somewhere. You can't take your cash with you. You can't. I am going, for all the reasons that you don't like the dollar or some fiat currency pick, is the reasons why Bitcoin is being embraced. And when China got involved, what was this, last couple of days? There's some exchange in China. We're going to find out about that. And they said, this is kind of, boom, there it goes, shoots up again. After they do all these raids and so on, which doesn't matter because they just, start something else like it up anyway, and it'll be better and different and over and kind of new servers and stuff. Now they have, there's a story on Freedom Phoenix today, or it's going up today or so. I went and do the research and I send it out and they put them up. And I go, it's the internet is going to be reconstructed to be off of the Department of Defense's internet, out their backbone internet, by, other countries. I think France and Germany are. And they said, if you're surveilling us on everything and this thing, you said, we're going to do our own thank you. And that's exactly what I saw is coming. But it's going to be satellite-based, and it's going to be privately funded, and it's going to be, I can get to it anywhere from anywhere and bypass the man. I go, this is all, it's all, what, you think it's not going to happen? We're going to have a war with everybody? Well, they're trying, I don't think it's going to work out the way they think. Man. All right. Well, that's second hour. We're going to have an interesting conversation with Drew. We'll go over the news here in a little bit.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Okay, is there anything not off limits to the government? Okay, now this is what, okay, I gotta make this point. When you, if you're in Bible study at all, you go to church and everything, one of the things that they really emphasize is, you know, Romans 13, you know, you do what the government says because God put governments in there and not for you to decide, and it's the government. And then another one they do is Christ, you know, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. And this story, and the stories today, we're just going to go over some of the headlines. You haven't backed up, you know, over the weeks and so on, and then the last couple of days and today, and I want to go over it. And the reason is because there's a theme here. And it goes, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. And if you don't know the whole story of that parable or that story in the Bible, it doesn't really make, you know, the point that I think they were trying to make. You had the Sadducees and the, what do they call it? The Pharisees and the Sadducees. It's like the Republicans and the Democrats. They were, you know, political and spiritual competitors that, you know, one was more strict than the other and ouch quit it and we should be in charge and trying to get more favors with the Romans that, you know, were the boss and whatever. So when they wanted Christ to be out of the way, he's the rebel Jesus, man. He was, you know, mucking up their little party. So, and all the confusion, and he's just, you know, I am the way, and bypass this whole city. The only time you ever saw Christ angry, I mean, you know, he was like, oh, it was the money changers. Now it was the guys at the temple that were, you know, oh, you gotta give me the money, and I'll give you this dove to go sacrifice, and you got, you know, and they were doing some kind of money changing thing, and he did not like that, and turned over all the tables, and defiling my father's house and blah, blah, blah. So it was, you know, that's where you see, you know, the Christ, oh, sell your cloak and get a sword. And, you know, there's all kinds of little tidbits in there. Well, what they were trying to do is they wanted to trick him. They wanted him to come out and say he was actually a challenge. He's, you know, king of the Jews. You know, he's claiming to be the son of man and God, and he's going to what? And people are by the droves are going to him. They don't like it when, you know, you have a rock band that's not signed a contract with the man. You know what I mean? If Time Warner doesn't own your contract, and you're out there being popular and kicking butt and singing like freedom songs like Jordan Page or something, and you got any way you can keep him from in a venue, which happened, I think it was Tallahassee or something like they. Yeah, they said, oh, no. We found out who you were, and I own or know the guy that has it, and you're not allowed, okay? So I'm going, okay. So they're trying to trick Christ into saying something that would demonstrate that he was against the Caesar, that he was, you know, above him, that he wasn't subservient to him. That, you know, you see, that's one thing they really want. Ooh, we can get Caesar involved in this. We can get his governor, you know, involved, Pilate. Okay, and then he washes his hands. Hey, man, you guys want him that bad? I gave the crowd a chance to pick between this murdering Barabbas piece of crap, you know, or Christ. I see no fault in him, but, you know, I would pick. Barabbas, you know, they wanted to get Christ. So it goes through the passion of the Christ, and they go, you know, interesting. But trying to trick him at one time, they go up to him, and they go, so, you know, what about paying taxes? You know, you want to get in trouble, you know, start talking about taxes. So they go up to him, and they say, well, you know, should you, pay your taxes and stuff like that? And he goes, well, I don't know. What do you pay it with? You know, this coin, you know, let me see that coin. And he looks at it, and it has Caesar on the coin. So he goes, well, I don't know, this guy's picture on it. Looks like, I don't know, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. And he hands it back, because he knew they were trying to trick him. So he's going, that looks like Caesar's coin. You're using Caesar's coin, right? You got Caesar's coin, you're using the man's money? You're using the man's money when the man wants his money? I guess, you know, it's his, you render it unto him, you'll peace out. Question answered. Yeah, ooh, damn it. They didn't like that. Okay. So when you see it in the history of it and you read all the stuff around it, they were trying to trick him. They were trying to get it to where he would, you know, voluntarily admit that you should be a tax dodger or something like that, which is, oh, man, can't do that. That's bad. So I had to ask a question while they're doing all this indoctrination. You go in the family, you know, Bible studies and all that. I'm always a questioner. I mean, that's one thing about religion that I think a lot of libertarians have a question about or a criticism is that you're just faith-based, believing, doing drone, lemming, over the cliff, kind of head down, whatever thing, as opposed to, you know, trying to get some confirmation of something real that, you know, that's a whole another area we can go in. But I can see what they were doing. Religion and the Council of Nicaea and when you had, Constantinople, you know, when they could see how powerful religion was and they started to bring it into the state. And they go, well, yeah, it's a state approved. Oh, yeah. You know, hell, we've always been of the Christian faith here. The whole Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire, the Eastern Rome, we have embraced it. Now, we got to make sure we get the right one, and we're going to have all these people come together, and we're going to canonize the Bible. See, I didn't even know about a lot of this stuff until I found that the Catholic Bible was different. You have what's called the Apocrypha, I think, and it's like extra books. There's other stuff. The other denomination, you know, the King James, they go, nah, I don't like this one. And I've read some of it, and I can see why they didn't put it in. It was kind of a downer, man. It was very negative. You know, all this guilt kind of stuff, and thou shalt be able to. And they go, you know what? We can just do away with this guy. I don't try. And how I found out one time is you got a bunch of Bibles laying around, so on. And a lot of times I'd just pick one up and I just flip through if something was going on. I just, you know, just for inspiration or just trying to find, you know, perspective on something or, you know, spark a creative solution to whatever. You just, you know, whip it through and you open it and you read a paragraph or so and you go, okay, you know, that's, you know, better than not. And, you know, and I give you something to think about. Well, there was I did that one time, and there was a passage in there from a book I didn't really recognize. I go, whatever. And I go, blah, 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 so-and-so, verse so-and-so, such-and-such. And I sent it to a friend of mine. It applied to something that was going on then. And he goes, what the heck is this? And I go, hey, man, it was in the Bible. And he goes, I don't know, recognize. And we pulled it out. And I'm going, oh, it's a different Bible. I can't believe I went all these years. I was probably in my 30s. You know, 40, at least 30s. And I'm going, wow, there's a different Bible? Oh, how'd that happen? Because the state got involved and they decided what they wanted in. You know, did you ever wonder where the Bible came from? It came from the government, man. It was government approved. You know, with a bunch of course, we had religious leaders in there. And my question was, if I render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, is there anything that's not Caesar's? I mean, if they just pass the law and say, yeah, it's mine too, is it? I mean, do I keep my life, my liberty, my just acquired property that I did? You know, when does it become Caesar's? Well, when we come back, we're going to see some more Caesar claiming in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Okay, along the same lines, let me tell you a little story. Here in Arizona, there was a... Okay. I'm going to build this up. We're going to have Judge Napolitano explain it here on Fox and Friends or whatever, what the EPA is doing. And I saw this firsthand, what was happening here in Arizona. The Valley of the Sun, Phoenix, Arizona, is a, what do they call it, alluvial floodplain or something. Well, anyway, it's just a bunch of dust and dirt from washing down from the erosion of the mountains around us. And as it flowed into the Salt River that runs right downtown through Phoenix and is part of the water system that they have various dams that go up as reservoirs into the mountains. So it'll go like, I don't remember the order, you know, Apache Lake, Saguaro Lake, Canyon Lake, Bartlett, Roosevelt, whatever, the Verde and the Salt River are dammed up all over the place. And the reservoir of the Roosevelt Dam here is so big that if every single other lake was totally dry and you had that one full, it's like 90% of all the water, you know, that's drinkable in Arizona. I mean, it's one big lake. All the others are just more flood control or their reservoirs or something. But the big one, Lake Roosevelt, we got us some water. So it's you want to know how low we are? Oh, the lake's so low. It doesn't matter. I want to look at Roosevelt. How full is Roosevelt? Oh, okay, it's 87%. Okay, we're good. Okay, you know, next. Well, what they did is they look at rivers as navigable or not. If it's you can navigate on it, then it is under some kind of federal or something control of the something. Well, what happened is the Salt River only flowed. I mean, it flowed, you know, a little bit. You know, you just always got some water in it if you take the dams out. Well, it's dry when they put the dams in. But it does flow sometimes, you know, with flood control and it gets a lot of rain and everything. You'll have the river go. They have Tempe Town Lake. They created these little inflatable balloon inner tube dams at the two ends, and they got themselves a lake. And if it gets bad, one of them busted, and then, you know, and there went all the water. So it's because they didn't maintain it. When this was all going on, about they were trying to get the Salt River to become a big giant lake for downtown Phoenix. They wanted to extend through Phoenix. It'd be a big, you know, a separate Phoenix. When they did this, they're talking about this and so on, you know, Rio Salado Project, which is Spanish for, you know, river salt. What they did is the EPA came in, they tried to claim all water. Now, what was interesting is they had an attorney here that they used that made his living with a grant from the federal government that was supposed to, he was defending the rights of the mentally challenged. It was just some, you know, obscure kind of, you know, I don't know, $150,000 a year or something or whatever, and he just happened to get, yeah, I do that. You know, I got a couple of cases I work on kind of sometimes. But really all it was to pay for a guy that did nothing but focus on the water thing. All right? That was his main deal. And you start finding this out and say, you know, how is he do it? He's got some federal grant of something that gives him the position of, but his real job, you know, is to make sure, that's just to pay him, his real job is to go after the water. Now, they tried to get control of the water. Now, what happened was it navigable or not? Well, it's mostly dry. You can maybe get a rowboat, you know, or something, but it's usually dry. But then they go, you know, ice road truckers. In Alaska, you can't say the frozen over river is navigable in the winter, you know. So is it still navigable? I guess if you got a submarine, but I mean, you know, so they're going, okay, you know, we'll redefine it as, you know, if it, you know, blah, so many months of the year, they come up with what they want it to be, navigable. All right. Now, why was that important? They wanted jurisdiction because what they're going to be talking about here, I saw this happen. This was 93, 94. No. It was 95, I remember. It was 1994, 95, because there was a city council race that was going on then. So one retired roofer, you know, old Ricky, you know, he knew all, because his parents had land in there, and he was interested, and he went at them. You know, they had big, giant utilities. We were talking about Salt River Project and APS, and they're going back and forth, and ouch, quit it, and all lawyer stuff. And then all of a sudden, Ricky wrote his own amicus brief and protect his parents, and he goes, look, you go back, they call it agrarian and riparian rights, or whatever, some water right thing. And he goes, when we started as a state, he'd bring in the treaty of this and the so-and-so of that. And the bottom line was, is that the water here in Arizona was claimed for the people here and in agriculture and how they were able to access it and what jurisdiction they did and didn't have. And all. So he filed this, and all of a sudden, boom, everything stopped. I was sitting in the hallway when this all the attorneys from, you know, the defense side that didn't want to have the federal government doing this stuff. They went, where'd you find this? How did you know this? What did you? They're just hand holding, walking the process through, and nobody actually did any real research on the beginning foundation of the documents that created the definitions of the whatever. So Ricky stopped that whole thing. But what we found out during that process is they just create tribunals. I mean, you're like, oh, we're having a meeting, and then you're going to come to the meeting, and you have to go to the meeting in jurisdiction of the meeting, and it's some regulatory and EPA kind of, and these attorneys made a mistake of even freaking going, you know? And so when Ricky did this and put a stop to it, we found out what the real goal was. The real goal is they wanted to have jurisdiction of all washes, tributaries. Any, if water flowed into that river and you had a little waterway or something that came, which this entire valley is a series of a bunch of washes. It's a bunch of little ripples. If you look at it, it's like, you know, looking at Mars from space or something. I mean, you got this big, you know, from the mountains, all these little tributaries and washes and stuff, and they have to build around that. And when we first moved here in the early 70s, they didn't do that too well, and, you know, you had a lot of floods. In fact, we had a big flood here because it just couldn't – the capacity of the drainage, they couldn't handle it. Well, what happened is they go ahead and they build around these washes, or they create drains, and it's all about being that one with the flow of water as it goes to the Salt River from the north, the mountains here north of Phoenix and around it. So if you – bad development, bad planning, you didn't have a place for the water to go down the road somewhere or underneath some big giant sewer culvert or something, man, you got yourself a big giant flooded plain here, which happens. So you go, okay. Ricky was able to stop. What? What were they trying to do? When we come back, we're going to go ahead and play this because you need to understand this history so that you understand for at least the last 20 years that I know of, they have been trying to use water as a way to control the use of all land. Because that's why, I'm sorry, you can't collect rainwater that falls on your property. That water is connected. You know, it kind of rain, it kind of semi-connected to the water on the ground that's connected to this body of water that's navigable, so they're claiming jurisdiction of the clouds. You think I'm kidding? I know why. Because they can. You know, they just do it. You know, all bodies are, this was the center of the book, Send in the Waco Killers by Vince Aprinowitz. It started, I used to go, and what he was saying, it wasn't really, the book wasn't about Waco. It was like, there was a quote from a guy that was a pig farmer, and he's standing with the press out there. He's on his porch, and he takes his 12-gauge, he goes, shur, shur. You tell that Reno bitch to send in her Waco killers. It was all about, you know, all the abuses that government has done in this, you know, catch-22 crap they put them in. And one of them was a hog farmer that he had a pig farm, and there was one agency saying he had to drain something, another agency saying he couldn't. And he couldn't comply with both at the same time. So each one of them on various levels were fining him to the point that they ran him out of business and they took the farm. And I think some family member bought it at auction for less than what he owed on and got it back anyway. Some, you know, justice semi almost prevailed. But, you know, the whole thing was is just regulatory capture. They're going after the use of land. And all of this started when Mikhail Gorbachev, Green Cross, Agenda 21, Rio, Kyoto, all that kind of, it is an international, worldwide, we control the land. And the only way you can get out of it is if you just shrug off all this multi-jurisdictional forces of whatever the heck. You'll see what I'm talking about when we play this Judge Napolitano piece from Freedom's Phoenix.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Yeah, I got busy. I'm sitting here looking at all of the stories on Freedom's Phoenix. I'm like, damn, you guys really get stuck on Freedom's Phoenix. I am sure it is. It's a time suck, man. I mean, you start going down that path. That's one of the things that you guys need to know on Freedom's Phoenix. When you subscribe, you get access to what's called the custom home module. And in there, you can customize any way you want. And a lot of people don't know. We're going to have to start emphasizing this more. And it's in the tutorials, but we'll do some special tutorials. Video tutorials that will keep coming up. Because I got this CAPTCHA program that allows me to take the screen and put audio over and explain everything and the steps by. And we did the whole thing. It took like 12 minutes. But if I just do little specific things, it'd be easier to swallow. And what happens is you can select what categories you want to ping up. You know, we have hundreds of categories. So you can put, I'm really interested in space travel and architecture and anthropology and geography and, you know, probably this, kind of battery project and, you know, and all this stuff. That's all I want to see, you know, pop up on my custom module and keep the highlight of each. You go from 1 to 5 stories in each individual category up to, I don't know, as many different categories as you want. And all that will come up into a custom module so it doesn't get lost and all the other stuff. You can also save link. You go, it's a save link. And you go, oh, hell yeah, I want to put this. And you get your own favorites page on Freedom's Phoenix. It's like its own page. You hit save link, and that story goes over there in case, you know, you don't have time to read it then, which is like a lot of them. You go through, and I'm like, you know, look, save that one. Okay, and save that one. All right, save that. I'll get to that one later. If you don't, you know, you're 50 stories behind by the next day, and you're like, man, where was that? So it's, you know, we have a lot of this, the features. I really love Freedom's Phoenix because I set it up the way that I want. And I did it for anybody else that wants to, that subscribes to. The problem is that you don't know it. And we haven't emphasized it because we keep going into new innovations and we're upgrading and we're in the middle of that again. Tens of thousands of dollars it's costing me to get, you know, more and more and more. That's why we need more subscribers. Go subscribe and you get all kinds of access to goodies. And they tell you the two main things, the features that you're going to be seeing in the next few weeks that are going to come up. Is we have the funding center, which will be kind of like a Kickstarter for Liberty Projects. It's all that, you know, it's like, hey, here's a good idea and the video and kind of, you know, and you can fund it. So we'll have that. And we have the shopping cart. So we're having our own Freedom Oriented Agoras Marketplace kind of thing, you know, that's going to have the shopping cart. So hopefully make Alma happy. So we're working on that and you'll get to share. Now, let me go ahead and play this. From Fox Friends News, whatever the heck it is. And the reason I'm so interested in this is because it is, I've been through this. I already know where this goes. It is a big, giant power grab by the man. And it's to control all land. It's all about the land. They'll say water. I mean, you know, water is important too. But the water's on or under or in or around land. And this is, we went through it here 20 years ago in Arizona, and they were a hair's breadth away if it wasn't for a libertarian activist that became, on this issue, became a candidate for Phoenix City Council that in a, I think it was like a 5-way race or something, he got 22% or something, and it forced a runoff. Well, he was third. You know, out of all of these, he just under, you know, into the third place position. So the top two went, and both of them screamed for his endorsement. What he came up with is a standard that we've been using for a lot of, okay, fine, you want my endorsement? Not a problem. I give you this endorsement, written endorsement, that's a contract that if you violate your oath of office, you know, to the Constitution, every infraction, you owe me $25. Okay? Now they go, well, sure, okay. Well, the guy that eventually did win, and they were just ignoring, you know, the machine. They don't care. Neither one went. They controlled both of them. But when they found out that he was willing to work with the libertarians on this condition, they went, no. We'll help you if you don't. Kind of, you know, and they went and helped to keep both of the guys from signing that contract, and this is why. Because they knew they were going to have him violate the Constitution, you know, and we were going to make a big deal out of it. And the reason that he said $25 is he wanted to go into small claims court. So what would happen? when you violate, and we've done this since then, you know, but when you collected money from Speaker of the House, okay, you're right, here's my $25 to Barry. I mean, you know, he did it. I would enforce it more. You know, Barry's like, you know, as long as he signs it. I go, no, you want me to, you do this deal with me, I'm going to freaking come at, you got to be prepared, man. You got to be ready. You know you're going to have to go after him. Well, what happened is when they violated their oath of office, $25 put it in the small claims court. You got a justice of the peace sitting there going, okay, we have a claim. You signed a contract. Here's the deal. Did you or did you not violate your oath of office on this particular deal? Now, what happens is you get the discussion, because this is back when we were all worried about government numbers and stuff. It didn't matter what they said. You know, it's just that you got to adjudicate them saying it. You know, so you go, okay, $25 goes to small claims court. Did he or did he not violate his oath of office? Or he can just give me $25. Well, they just started giving $25. They go, oh, yeah, you're right. Here's $25. Hey, you guys, okay, here's $25. It was worth it to him. They made, you know, what, $100? A couple $100, some, you know, big issues come up and everything. Yep, no controversy. Don't get to go to trial, and we don't have justice of the peace rendering. See my point? So this was a very, you want libertarian endorsement on something, say, okay, only under the condition you sign this contract with me personally, that when you violate your oath of office, you either give me $25 or we're going to small claims court, and we will adjudicate, and we will have some fun. And they're like, damn it, that's where this came from, on this issue. All right, so you know. Here we go.
This could be the EPA's most dramatic power grab ever, enforcing a federal regulation to gain control of nearly all the water in the country. So what does it mean for your property rights? Here to weigh in is Fox News senior judicial analyst, Judge Andrew Napolitano. Judge, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
What are they trying to do?
The EPA is redefining the meaning of the word water, so as to give it, the EPA, the ability to regulate every body of water in the United States, whether it's a little stream or whether it's a freestanding pond. They have done this by finding a bogus scientific study which says the following. Under the earth, way down in the bowels of the earth, all of these bodies of water are connected to each other. Now, why is the EPA saying that? Because when Congress wrote the Clean Water Act, it didn't define water, so the Supreme Court supplied a definition of water. Right. And the Supreme Court's definition of water, for EPA purposes, is it's got to be connected to navigable waters.
Okay, so they're grabbing, they want to control all water. Why?
There's something about government that it always grows. It always wants to regulate more. It always wants to write more rules. It always wants to control more behavior. And the EPA is an extreme example of this. President Obama has put onto the EPA extreme environmentalists who want to regulate every aspect of our lives. So how does this affect you? If you have a little bit of water on your property, you can't build near that water if this regulation comes to pass without the approval of the federal government. Never mind that you need a local building permit. Sure. Never mind that the tax assessor is going to raise your taxes because you built a new garage or a barn or an addition on your house. You need permission of the bureaucrats in Washington. That's going to cost a lot more money, and it's going to take a lot longer, and that's going to decrease the value of your property.
And if you don't live up to the letter of the EPA law, then the fine is $37,000 a day.
$37,500 a day when you defy the EPA. This is the most draconian fine for anything anywhere in the United States of America.
How are they getting away with this?
Sometimes they get away with it, sometimes they don't. When the Supreme Court reined them in a couple of years ago, they dropped about 90% of the cases that they were pursuing.
You think this is on that same track?
Yes, I do. I do. But in the interim, a lot of good, decent, hardworking people are going to fall victim to these monsters in Washington, because the president believes that they should be able to control these aspects of our lives.
It all falls under the Clean Water Act. We all want clean water, but we don't want this.
No, I can't imagine anybody except the regulators wanting this.
Of course. All right, Judge Napolitano, thank you.
Pleasure, Steve.
Okay, so you get a drift. You see what's going on. We're against the entire concept of what they think is governing. I mean, you know, the government. It's social and economic engineering of every aspect of our lives. It is this concept that we battle. That's why they're, you know, they don't like us none too much. You know, the Levolution, we understand. You know, the proper rule of government, Declaration of Independence. You know, not what kind of government. It's how to tell when they're bad. When they're not defending the rights of individuals, they're bad. They're bad, they're bad, they're bad. And it has got way out of hand. So far, they don't even understand how they're perceived or why. And that's when it comes crashing down. And that's what this Freedom Summit in February is about. What do we do after? Because we got to start preparing for the after. Because after is going to come.
On Wednesday, October 16th, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case of Kaley v. United States. This case will undoubtedly be a landmark decision on the legality of civil asset forfeiture, a government seizure of property and cash, even when the owner isn't charged with a crime. In this particular case, in February 2007, Kerry and Brian Kaley were indicted on charges of money laundering and other offenses for reselling medical devices, including sutures that she had obtained from hospitals to which she had previously sold the same products. Lawrence Hurley from Reuters reports, federal prosecutors sought a pretrial order to freeze their assets, including a home and certificate of deposit worth more than $500,000 that the Kayleys were hoping to use to pay for their lawyers. The Kayleys are claiming their Sixth Amendment rights were violated as they were then unable to hire their preferred lawyer. Amy Howe from SCOTUS blog reports, several justices seemed willing to agree that any potential burden imposed on the government by a ruling in the defendant's favor are outweighed by the significant cost to the defendant if he or she is unable to hire their desired attorney. But it was unclear whether a majority would reach that conclusion. It also appears that justices are not split along ideological lines. Despite both being appointees of President George W. Bush, Justice Samuel Alito seems to be at odds with Chief Justice John Roberts. Roberts, who is worried about the overweening power of the government, said, "It's not that the property is more valuable than liberty. It's that the property can be used to hire a lawyer who can keep him out of jail for the next 30 years. On the other side, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg said requiring a judge to look beyond the indictment would create the anomaly that the grand jury has said there is probable cause that this defendant can be prosecuted, and then you have the judge make a determination that there isn't probable cause to believe it. Ginsburg also expressed concern that if the assets were released, the defendant could spend them on something else besides their defense. Darpana Shef of Forbes magazine compares the tactic of asset forfeiture to the scene from Through the Looking Glass when the White Queen explains that in her realm, punishment comes first, the trial next, and crime maybe last of all. Kaley gives the court the opportunity to prove that in reality, a person must legally be convicted of a crime before they can legally be punished. This truth extends from civil asset forfeiture all the way to the use of drones in the never-ending war on terror. In other news, Ballot Access News reports, on October 18th, the Ohio Attorney General's office filed a brief in support of Ohio's ban on out-of-state circulators in the case of Citizens in Charge v. Husted. The state says that the ban is needed because it has a short time frame in which to check the validity of petitions, and if it needs to subpoena circulators, if the circulator is out of state, that process would take a long time. This is illogical for several reasons. The most important is that Ohio does not need to subpoena circulators, whether in-state or out-of-state, to check the validity of petition signatures. Furthermore, Ohio law already permits out-of-state circulators to work on independent presidential candidate petitions, and the state's brief does not explain how Ohio copes with checking that type of petition. Also, the brief hints that out-of-state circulators who work on initiative petitions are interfering with the ability of Ohio residents to decide their own policies without outside interference.
This is the Onion Week in Review. Gushing women voters announced Monday that they just can't help but feel an uncontrollable attraction to the sexist Republican Party. Saying they should know better but just can't resist the GOP's reckless neglect of women's health issues, smitten females across the country are reportedly driven wild by the GOP's blatant chauvinism.
I can't say no to bold, misogynistic politicians who think their authority extends to my uterus. Whenever you vote for a Republican, you feel like you're doing something a little bit naughty.
Top officials within the U.S. military acknowledged Wednesday that they were desperate to be given just one solid war they could really knock out of the park. Citing the recent string of messy, ambiguous military engagements in the Middle East, members of the Pentagon brass called for a conflict against a sovereign nation with a standing army and a clear-cut bad guy who employs conventional tactics and weaponry.
No roadside bombs, no plainclothes militants siding out among innocent civilians. Just a fair fight where two sides shoot at each other and someone wins. We're absolutely great at that.
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Declare independence of me, Ernest Hancock. Yep, on the video, there's Davi with his airplane he made, BitcoinNotBombs.com. And we got his cohort in crime, Mr. Drew Phillips, on the line. Hello, Drew. How are you?
Good morning. I'm just fine.
Okay, well, go ahead and, speak
Hello?
Into the... There you go. Speak into the receiver. I got you cranked all the way up. All right.
All right.
Now, this is what I want to do is let's go ahead and get an update on Bitcoin. My thing, my biggest concern is that, man, it jumped up again. It's 200 and something points and something happened in China and something. And we're going to do something. So tell me what something's going on.
Oh, render unto Satoshi. What is Satoshi's?
Ah, see? Yeah, you're absolutely correct, which might be CIA for all we know. So I'm just going, they go, oh, well, it's good and encrypted and secure and open, and you kind of, I'm going, yeah? Well, you might be able to read code, but I have no idea. For all I know, they just go, it's all ours now. So, go ahead and talk about who is Satoshi, where that came from.
I have no idea who Satoshi is, but according to Reddit.com, they just found him. He works at a post office in Sunnyvale, so whatever that's worth.
No, really? They're saying they found out who it was?
No.
Right.
yeah. So I don't think who Satoshi is really relevant. He or the group of people who created Bitcoin, they created Bitcoin, and It's too late now. They created it. It doesn't matter who created it. It's there. It's a reality in our lives, and you can participate in it, or you can sit on the sidelines, or you can ignore it. In your choice.
Let me go ahead and ask some basic questions. You might be
sure.
Because you spend a lot of time on the forums and talking about it, and how many libertarians can dance on the head of a pin holding a Bitcoin or something, right? So
right.
So what I want to do is I go, all right, I need to know at the fundamental base level of this, I understand the concept that it's encrypted, it's you're not supposed to, you got 15 billion, quantum computers, you might be able to break it, this quantum computing thing, NSA, it's not, if it's all about, just money, well, they'll spend it. I mean, because what else are they going to do? They just print it and do whatever they want to try and get whatever. Now, the difficulty that they're finding is that the encryption and the way it was set up, it's hard for them. Like, they have 600,000 bitcoins from what's-his-face, Dread Pirate Roberts, and now they're just sitting on this wallet with no access to, and they're going to start shaking him down and giving them a little bit of water torture or whatever to, you know, give us the codes, and then they'll have the money. But the thing is I'm going, all right, why? How is this that you mine them into existence? They come in, there's only a limited amount, which I think is, what, 20 million or something? Is that the number that is available to be mined?
Yeah, 21 million.
So 21 million, there's a limit on it. Okay, so that gives it some value there. It's private. That gives it some value. You don't have to go through any central banker. That gives it some value. You can be secret. That gives it some value. But the thing that they're always going after are the people that are trying to make money out of any kind of centralization of even where you keep your wallet, the apps that are on your phone. If Verizon said, you know what, everybody that has on, and we can see they got it, that has a blockchain app on, you know, boom, you're off. You can't have access to it. Now do I, how do I securely put in my safe a number or something to where I'm off the grid that I can still trade bitcoins with other people and not be on some hub, a backbone of something that they can turn off?
How do you? So, sure, there's a number of options. You're right, though. There's pressure points, and whenever you're dealing with a Bitcoin service that's centralized, some third-party service that you're trusting with your coins or with your private keys, there's a choke point for government aggressors to come against. So that's probably not the safest place to keep the bulk of your bitcoins if you're storing them. But there are other ways to store them which would not allow for the government scrutinizers to come in and take them.
Okay, well, give me an example. Like, we just went, Keith Cernick and I went and checked on the time capsule. Did you know that?
No.
We, you know, like last month, early September, we went to the time capsule and found it right where we left it. Anybody finds that, they're the man. They deserve it if they can find it. But we go back in the canyon and the lake of the canyon and the hike of the canyon, and we get back there and we open it up. And, you know, very musty mold smell because it got wet because Pete Iyer, you know, chucked it into the rocks. But anyway, so we get that all open and we added some more silver, a 357, you know, some ammunition. You know, we put some more goodies in there and so on. Now, if I was to take a memory key and I had something on and I put it in there, what would I store? What could I keep? What could I put on that memory key? A billion trillion Bitcoin dollars or something? I mean, how would it, and it not be anywhere else? And then what happens if that memory key was stolen or taken? And then, you know, they would need to code it. You know, help me out here. How would I store Bitcoin away from the man?
Sure. So you could generate a new key pair, a new private key and public key. And you can do that offline. You could do that with, so that nobody, you know, even if they were cracked into your computer and watching what you were doing, you can do that sort of offline and do that privately, and you could create a new key pair, a new address, and a private key, and you could spend some bitcoins into that address, and you could print that out on a piece of paper, or you could put it on a CD or a flash drive, and then you could put that into your time capsule, and it would be safe there. I guess a paper wallet probably wouldn't be a good idea if your time capsule is getting wet, but a CD or a DVD or a thumb drive or a printed out laminated paper wallet, I guess, would be sufficient. You could store your bitcoins onto that address and that key pair, and you could put it into the time capsule, and then in a million years when somebody found that time capsule, they'd be able to take the private key and import it into their wallet, and that Satoshi that you, you know, that 0.00001 Bitcoin that you put on that address would now be worth, you know, I don't know, $1,000.
11 billion trillion dollars. I mean, it's kind of like all these guys, they wake up from suspended animation or off somewhere and they come back or get grandpa's box in the attic and had some IBM stock and all of a sudden now they're filthy, stinking rich. So this is, you know, which is just as likely that the one thing we do not have in there is Bitcoin in the time capsule. And that keeps dry. It's one of those composite 20-millimeter ammo boxes kind of thing. It was just, I don't know if you remember when Pete threw it and it busted open.
I remember the time capsule, yes.
It got wet. Weekend. And yeah. We got the tape. Remember the tape that we left in there? I got this sitting in front of me right now.
So no, the videotape?
Yeah, so of us putting it there to begin with. So I'm going to edit that, got some more pictures and video. I just haven't had time, you know, so we're going to be working on that over the next couple of weeks. So what happens is that this is a good example of some things we have of value. We put some silver there. We had, you know, different bumper stickers and flags and just all kinds of, you know, Ron Paul Revolution shirt and just, you know, a bunch of trinkets and trash we just threw in there, valued a lot of people. They get that, they go, ooh, this is cool. And we have video and pictures of what we put in there. Now, had I done a flash drive with a CD, read it file backup and some, you know, paper and sealed and however many levels of, I got it there thing and put it in there, I can put some Bitcoins in there. If we'd done it when we first did this, Bitcoins were what? Less than $4. So now we all be scrambling to go find a time capsule to be wealthy, you know? So we're going to talk about how this works and what's going on in China and what is going to be the main thing that we're working on now and how we can bring this about so that people will understand just how powerful an idea this is and why the man is coming after us. We'll be right back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
Shooting star leaping through the sky. A tiger defying the laws of gravity.
I'm a racing car.
Passing by.
Yeah, you fill up Bitcoin bombs. We're going to find out. They got a project, Hoodie the Homeless. We want to get into that, you know, before. All right, let's do it now. Let's just get it out of the way. You know, because the Hoodie the Homeless, you know, there was a. It's kind of a Bitstarter thing. It was like raising money deal that they did, and it got enough to where they started, you know, getting a whole bunch of homeless wearing some hoodies, or you can buy the hoodies. You know, tell us about it, Drew. What was going on?
Yeah, sure. So we thought this is a project that's sort of been in the back of Davi's mind for a while, and he had been telling me about it for a number of months. And essentially what happened is he pitched this idea to a lot of people to say, you know, he went and solicited some feedback. He volunteers for an organization that hands out sack lunches to people in need, you know, feeds them. And he asked, you know, for feedback, and the feedback that he got there in San Francisco was there's so many organizations in the Bay Area giving out free food that they don't necessarily need food. What they need are warm clothes. But unfortunately, when you pitch this kind of idea to a group like Occupy Wall Street and you present them with a bill, they tend to think, well, shouldn't everything be free? So he's been wanting to buy hoodies, you know, raise money to buy these hoodies, and he hasn't been able to find a good opportunity. Well, we thought Bitcoin lends itself to this very nicely because we can accept donations from all around the world, and in fact, we did. So we started on a platform called BitcoinStarter.com, and it's analogous to Kickstarter, and you set a goal, and you give different pledge points, and you can offer perks and rewards for people that pledge. And people pledged to us, and they wanted to see this project through. So some 76 people, individuals, contributed to this effort. And at the end of the day, we raised between 20 and 21 Bitcoin. You know, the campaign ended, and the guys over there at BitcoinStarter.com sent us the funds that we'd raised. And we turned that around real quick to our friends at Mass Appeal Specialties. And they had offered us a really good deal on some discontinued hoodies that they couldn't really sell because they're discontinued and they didn't have all sizes and that sort of thing. So they gave us a great deal on the hoods, and we said, "Well, that's great. Let's buy these for people in need. You know, you can't really sell these retail because they're discontinued. So, but we can still do something good for them with them, and we can sort of show." You know, the power of Bitcoin and the power of charity and do something good for the people of San Francisco. So I'm kind of jumping the gun. The hoodies are just been delivered to San Francisco, and it's just a matter of finding a time to go out and pass them out.
It's getting cold, man.
Yeah, right. And you know, so, you know, well, better late than never, I suppose. But, right, so that needs to happen. And then that's the first wave of the campaign, and we can call that a success. You know, like I said, we had some 70 people donate to this effort, and they wanted to see it follow through. And there's some photos of the hoodies up now, but it would be more exciting to get some photos and video of actually giving them out to the people who need them. So, so going back to your question about Kickstarter or whatnot, it's very, you know, real. I mean, Kickstarter, you know, Kickstarter takes a fee, and that's sort of fair. It's a service, right? Bitcoin Starter takes a fee, and I think that's fair. It's a service. Although the guys at Bitcoin Starter did waive the fee for us just because they felt like that was their contribution to it, which was great. The other fee that's not talked about with Kickstarter or Indiegogo is the credit card processing fee, right? So if you want to donate to, say, John and Catherine Bleich's Indiegogo campaign, Indiegogo is going to take a fee for the service, and that's acceptable to me. But PayPal is going to take a fee for me to even give them money to begin with. Well, in the world of Bitcoin, that fee is gone. It doesn't really exist. It's half a cent, really. And people are able to send money, if they so choose, to efforts like this and others. For very little, for no fee at all, for virtually no fee. And that's the power of Bitcoin and getting donations from literally all around the world, as we did on this project. So that's been pretty exciting. And like I said, that was kind of the first wave, and those hoodies have been ordered. Although we didn't fully reach our goal. They had 300-plus hoodies on discount, and we weren't able to buy all of them. We were able to buy over 150 of them. But we will now transition into selling hoodies, brand new hoodies, not the discontinued ones, but brand new hoodies and T-shirts with our iconic Bitcoin Not Bombs design, and the proceeds from those sales will go to help us purchase the remaining hoodies. So,
okay, now what's going to happen? I get, how are you going to distribute? You're going, hey, you look homeless, here's a hoodie. I mean, you know, and of course, being cold, they're going to be wearing them. It's like advertising, and then and they're orange. It's not like they're not going to be. Oh, there's another one of them Bitcoin Not Bombs, you know, homeless. I mean, so tell me how you think this is going to actually work.
Sure. So this is we absolutely want to do this again next year. You know, we set our goal high. You know, but 325 hoodies still isn't a lot of shirts. So we want to do this again next year, and we want to make it bigger. But we're not there yet. We'll have to get through this year first. But we did try to emphasize the sort of guerrilla marketing aspect of it, and I think there's a lot to be said about this. And I think maybe next year we can really play with this a little more and get people excited about it for this aspect. But yes, what if? And we caught a lot of flack on Reddit, on the subreddit, the Bitcoin subreddit, for exploiting homeless people. So that's fun. You're catching flack when you're over the target. So I don't think we're exploiting homeless people. I think we're doing something good. And I don't think people who receive a hood who are cold are going to complain that it has some message that they don't agree with on it. This is also an educational outreach type of event. We're creating literature, information about Bitcoin, how to get started Bitcoin, not just for homeless people, but for anybody who wants to learn about Bitcoin. But
a lot of times people are homeless because they can't get into the system for whatever reason. You know, they can't get a bank account. They can't. I mean, you know, they're homeless oftentimes because of the barriers that are put up, where Bitcoin is like, hey,
absolutely,
I can start trading again.
We're talking about the unbanked population in this country, and it's a very large part of the population. And it's not people who are just homeless or down on their luck, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the stereotypes of homelessness are way exaggerated. But there are plenty of people in this country who are unbanked, who don't have, you know, and it's because of simple problems. Like, I can't get a driver's license because I don't have a Social Security card, and I can't get a Social Security card because I don't have a driver's license. I mean, it's really, you know, it's these stupid government hoops that they have to jump through just to get a bank account, just to cash a paycheck, and then they're stuck going to the cashing center that takes 7%. So Bitcoin alleviates a lot of this, and I think there's a lot of room to make that point in the space and show that, look, the unbanked of not just this country but the world can benefit from this technology, and here's sort of our expression of how to share that information with people, and again, not just the people that we're trying to serve in San Francisco but all around the world. So that's kind of where we are now. Like I said, we still want to continue the fundraising. We still want to purchase the remaining hoodies from Mass Appeal that they offered to us. So this time around, we're not just asking for donations and offering perks. This time, we're selling a product and
applying the proceeds to the remaining
city. BitcoinNotBombs.com. Get more information. When we come back, we'll talk about Bitcoin Friday. I want to talk about Black Market Friday. We're going to be using Bitcoin for that, too. And there's so much activism that can be used around the concept of the Bitcoin. And I like what they're doing. Is there some way we can get involved here in Arizona?
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Andrew Phillip, Bitcoin, not bombs. Yeah, Davi, I guess his question is, why do the old gray-haired guys we need and then bringing in Davi? I mean, what's that all about? Why not? Because I encouraged them to, they wanted to know when they went to Libertopia, one of the guys that does the scheduling, and he said, Ernie, this Bitcoin, because I've been hammered, we take the summer off of this group, and it's a bunch of the boys. I mean, it's a doctor, lawyer, broker, Republican, I give, money and get my $10,000 a year kind of round table at the Cato, whatever the thing, and I've always been, the black sheep libertarian anarchist, freaking bomb throwing guy out in the middle of the whatever. It's amazing that, I'm even invited. So what happened was, I go, you guys don't understand what's coming. I mean, you didn't understand the Levolution. I remember, first me coming to you and, that'll never, I go, I want everybody to remember what you guys just said. I want you guys to remember, because I'm going to come back and say, I freaking told you so, because you have no clue what's going on out here. So then it is, and I told you so doesn't really, they go, well, we never said that. Yeah, okay, right. Video, which is what they don't do. There's no videotaping or audio taping at these meetings. So I'm going, okay. So now they're I go, Bitcoin is representative of, just not them. Abandoning the central planning of the whatever. And I go, it's with the money. And these young kids, man, I tell you, they're all over it. Well, how many do you have? I go, well, I don't know, not many. I mean, that's not the point. You guys are missing it. This represents something else. It is a whole abandonment of the system because they can. So they're going, okay, well, we want to talk to some people. They go to Libertopia. I introduced them to Drew and Davi. And authoritarian sociopathy, he had printed out and had around and so on and had advertisements for Bitcoin in there. The whole point that I'm trying to make is this Larkin Rose and defending Archimedes and next phases of projects and whatever we're doing comes down to the most dangerous superstition is all this kind of – the only thing that gives fiat currency any value is this respect of authority, So I'm going, so I thought Davi would be the perfect person to kind of blend all this together that does the art and graphics for it, has a lot of stories to tell, did the Silver Circle movie connection he's got with that on the silver, so we haven't forgot about silver. We have the authoritarian sociopathy project and the hoodie for the homeless, and he understands how Bitcoins work. Who better? So I go, that's why, let's get Davi there. Now, of course, are you going to come up for the meeting, Drew?
Oh, a bunch of Republicans. I mean, look, I'm all for people learning about Bitcoin, and I'm happy to help. And we offer free advice on our website to anyone who seeks it out. But I think that I really think that this Bitcoin thing it's sort of a long-term game, and unfortunately, the older generation is not the important part. It's like anything else. The younger you can teach them, the quicker this is going to be adopted, and that's sort of where, not my focus is, but certainly where I think the most interesting developments in Bitcoin are coming, is can a 12-year-old, properly maintain a wallet and feel safe about their money, and what effects does it have when a 12-year-old is dealing with a deflationary currency, and is saving for the future in a currency that isn't being constantly inflated by the central scrutinizers. So, that's all fine and great, and you're meeting, there are like three nice, loving anarchists in a sea of ugly Republican neocons, so good luck with that.
well, we have, it's about a third. I mean, it's grown over the years. I've been dealing with these guys for 20 years, and I tell you, it's starting, the invasion has starting to take over, and they're freaked out.
Like I said at the beginning of the show, some people are going to ignore it. Some people don't want to play with it, and that's their prerogative. It isn't for everybody. There is sort of a large learning curve to Bitcoin, and time needs to be taken to properly understand it. You can't just watch a video and learn it in one day. It took 6 months, and you know, for people to grasp it, and that kind of transitioned to what you're talking about with China. That didn't happen overnight. China news in China has been slowly coming out about Bitcoin for 3 to 4 to 6 months, and people have been experimenting with it, and only till now do enough people feel confident to where the exchanges there are coming online, and people are getting interested in it and buying it and running up the price. So,
well, tell me about that. China had a price. I mean, it's one thing. Before I forget, I wanted to make a mention. The reason why I think it's important for these guys to, it's not so much that they understand. I'm not worried about them. It's for you guys to get the perspective of these are the high end. This is what you're up against. These are the people that don't want you to succeed. These are the people that they don't understand it. They don't like it. They want it squashed like a bug. They, you know, it's not their thing. It's out of their control. It makes them irrelevant, and they're freaking out. It's not that they understand you. It's that you understand them. That, you know, as much as I try to share with them your perspective and Generation Next coming up, I keep screaming about. It's like I'm really kind of done with that. I don't really care about that. It's just that I would feel that you would be served by you guys witnessing them and seeing the fear in their eyes. And I'll tell you, in the early 90s, when our children just started getting of age and we were wanting to teach them about money, we went to the local, I think it was a Thunderbird Bank or some local, the closest bank that happened to be by where we lived. And I go, okay, because I remember as a kid, they would have little kids' savings account. You would go ahead and open up your $10 and you add a dollar here, $2, you get in the system. They encouraged that. Well, then in the early 90s, by that time, they didn't give a crap. The service fees on their few dollars, they went back to put more money in. Within a couple of months, all the money they put in was gone.
And it's gone.
And they go, and it's, yeah, it's like South Park, and it's gone. So that's good. I'll try and pull that up. So, you know, that was the, now the Bitcoin is different. At least it's still there. You know, they're not taking it for sitting there. Now, maybe more value, less valuable. That's not the point. But the entire new generation coming in and understanding Bitcoin and how to use it and getting their lawn mowing babysitting money, and they put it in there, all of a sudden they have an understanding of how that works. Generation Next is totally off the central plan grid. Why would they use a bank? Why would they put it in dollars? Why would, there is no evidence of anything, even since 20 years ago, my kids were little, that the system ripped them freaking off. And to try and justify whatever the hell is going on there, you can't even, you know, convince a 12-year-old. And if you can't convince a 12-year-old, you got issues. So China, go ahead and tell me about China.
I'm all for putting the fear into Alan Corwin's eyes. I'm all for it.
That is a side benefit.
I don't know. I think that was really what I had to say about China, is that this wasn't an overnight thing. But it's interesting. I mean, I think the same thing will happen with this recent Silk Road news. People are just learning about Bitcoin or hearing about it for the first or second time. Now they're starting to look into it. Now they're doing a little research, getting their first wallet, doing their first sort of transactions and playing around with it. And in 3 to 4 to 6 months from now, you're going to see another wave of people saying, yeah, you know, come on in, the water's fine. And again, that learning process has to take place first.
Black Market Friday.
Yeah, and you're going to see another wave of people getting in and more interest in Bitcoin. So it's only up from here. There's still a lot of technical fears and weird things and who knows. And you know, Bitcoin's a wild ride. You can't predict what's going to happen. But for the most part, it's only up from here. I think that there's a lot of truth to that, although I'm not, you know, don't take my word for it and go all in or anything. But it's certainly exciting. And I think that it's still a great time to buy. If the project succeeds and Bitcoin becomes a widely adopted, accepted currency, we truly could see $1,000 Bitcoins. That is a likely scenario. When that happens, I don't know. But you know, I mean, the other thing, you know, going into Black Market Friday and Black Friday and Bitcoin Friday, as they call it, one of the problems is that 90% of the Bitcoins in existence don't move. Most people are speculating long term. They're holding onto their Bitcoins very tightly. They don't spend them. But we'd like to see a different economy. We'd like to encourage people to participate in commerce. We'd like to see people buy things with them. And when you buy things with them, you should go and buy more Bitcoin so that you can buy more things in the future and not just hoard them. Although certainly you're free to do with your money as you choose.
But Bitcoin Friday is now, like Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. And last year there were 60-some websites. This year there will be twice as many websites offering a one-day deal in Bitcoin.
Okay, but we want to participate. In fact, Tiger's been going coding, keying as fast as he can and getting ready for it. And it looks like he's got stuff to show me today, so we'll see what happens. We'll talk about it.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
I recently signed up for one of these self-defense classes and brought along a camera crew to watch. Take a good look at this class instructor.
Thank you very much.
Boy, was he smooth. He tried to butter us up with flowery compliments like, good work, nice try. But don't worry, folks, I wasn't letting my guard down for one second. Maybe he wasn't planning to attack me at all, but he could potentially plan to attack me at some point, and that left only one option. Take him out first.
Says he missed the guy.
My quarry approached, and when the moment was right, I struck. I knew he'd be able to counter my every move if I just did what he had taught me, so instead, I did exactly the opposite. I beat him with a baseball bat.
I am Shelby Cross! Do not ever attack me!
Now, folks, I acknowledge that this man may have never been a threat, but a potential threat is just as dangerous as a real one. I don't play games with my life, and neither should you, and that's it.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
So good! So good, I got Drew Phillips on the line! Okay, we're going to, you know, I always like working with Drew. We have a good time, have some fun, and have an impact. Now, what I want to do is, let's go ahead and talk about, I want to get this, you know, before the show's over. China, what the heck happened? They opened up a, you know, just what's the buzz online, man? Tell me what's going on.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't really have any more insight on it other than you know, you're right. This exchange just opened, and there's others, and there's ways to get Bitcoin in China now, but like I said, it didn't happen overnight. It's sort of been gradually building, sort of the interest. And it takes a while to understand Bitcoin. It takes a few months for even, you know, laymen like us to download the software and get a wallet and do a few transactions and really start to understand it and become comfortable with it. And I think that's what's happening in China as well.
Took me about a day.
What's that?
Took me about a day. I mean, simply, I just, you know, I downloaded the blockchain app onto my phone. I had, you know, I don't know, up to like 8 Bitcoins at one time. And then I started using them whenever I'd go anywhere and people took them and you're at festivals and it goes blip, 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 blip. And I, you know, pay people to do different things. I mean, you know, some video things, people doing different work or commissions or sales or giving, you know, all of a sudden, I don't have any Bitcoins anymore. And I'm like, I need some more. Oh, they're 200. Maybe I'll wait.
Well, hang on a second. Don't wait. They're not going down. I mean, maybe a little. I would go to Cash into Coins. You can go to bitcoin.bonds.com and click on a big banner. It says Cash into Coins. You can deposit Federal Reserve notes at Wells Fargo Bank of America. And within an hour or two, you get coins right to you, and you can get back to spending and advancing this economy. But, you know, free plug. So, you know, but they were cash in acquaintances and really great with this hoodie, the Homeless Project, and contributed quite a bit and has been helping us out.
Hey,
but
BitcoinNotBombs.com, and it says cash in the coins. Click there. You because I did that before with BitInstant, and I went to Bank of America. We went through this process. I gave them, you know, cost me, $1.35 to do it or something, you know, but I gave them the money. Boom, it got credited. I went to Liberty Coin Precious Metals in Scottsdale. I bought silver with the Bitcoin. As far as I'm concerned, the loop was closed. I take cash in, got Bitcoin, silver, done. And I go,
yes.
Really? Now, Roberts and Roberts, they take Bitcoin for silver and gold. I'm going, okay. So this silver and gold liquidity into Bitcoin kind of thing, and Roberts and Roberts, I mean, it becomes a real current. I'm wondering when they're going to come after Tim Fry. You know, I mean, he's got right up there on the banner, and come get me. You know, what do you think? So how, tell me about your gold and silver link.
Yeah, so, it's beyond that now. Maji Metals, they've been taking Bitcoin for quite a while. I just read of a new place in Austin, Texas that's now taking gold and silver. And so the idea here is that, one thing to point out that's interesting is when the last crash, as they called it, when Bitcoin reached 260 and then went back down to under 100, at the time, the exchanges were still sort of shaky, and people were having problems getting cash in and out of exchanges, and it wasn't very fluid, right? The liquidity wasn't really there, and there were some problems. So one thing that people turned to was Maji Metals, because at the time they were taking Bitcoin, and you could just go right to their website and buy it right from their website. And so, you know, everyone has a sell price, but why sell for dollars? And when you have these services selling hard money for Bitcoin, all of a sudden that's a very attractive way to get out of the currency if you don't feel safe about it. So, I imagine that as Bitcoin did reach 200 here the last few days, that the entities like Maji and Roberts & Roberts that take Bitcoin probably started seeing a bit more business because people, you know, they're speculators. They don't think it's going to last for whatever reason, and they want it to move their Bitcoins into something else. Well, go buy gold and silver with it, and you can do that very easily now. And as I think I'm more excited about precious metals dealers getting on board with Bitcoin because it adds liquidity on, you know, for real money. I'm not so worried about getting out of my Bitcoin into dollars. I don't need those services when I have services that allow me to get into gold and silver.
See, this is what I've been saying, Joe, this whole time. I never really saw Bitcoin as money. I saw it as a good currency. It's good trade. It's easy to use. It's fast. There's no charges and everything. But if I want to hold my wealth somewhere, I'm like, I want it to go clinkle, clinkle in my hand. Okay? So that is, so I would never have more than, I don't know, a couple thousand in Bitcoin to do dealing with. And if I'm using it as a currency, it doesn't really matter how much it goes up and down, you know, unless it's these big giant swings from, you know, 60 to 600. I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, this kind of thing. But, I mean, you expect this to happen in the market. And I tell you what was interesting. When they went after Silk Road and they did that, they always go, aha, see, what do you got to say now, Ernie? And I'm going, man, you guys don't get it. That has absolutely nothing to do with Bitcoin. The Bitcoin is fine. It goes down, and within hours, it popped back up. I'm going, all the government did was demonstrate how much they can't screw with it. You know, they were trying to make a point of how they could screw with it, and all they did was demonstrate how they couldn't. I mean, in my opinion, what's yours?
Yeah, I mean, we saw a panic sell-off. You know, maybe some people thought that Silk Road was an important part of the economy, but I think overall it was shown that it wasn't. Yes, people buy drugs with Bitcoin. People buy drugs with cash all the time. We're not trying to ban the dollar. It showed that it really wasn't a huge negative impact on the marketplace. There's still plenty of places to spend, you know, legitimate places to spend your Bitcoin. You can buy lovely hoodies and T-shirts from Bitcoin Not Bombs. I mean, but you can buy a whole host of things, services and products, precious metals. You can sell, your things for Bitcoin. The economy is, it's not robust. It's not perfect. It's certainly not, you know, rivaling the dollar yet, but it's growing. It's growing rapidly. And we're seeing new products and services jump into the marketplace all the time. You can now buy real estate with Bitcoin. You can book your vacation with Bitcoin. I mean, the possibilities are endless. And as people get excited about Bitcoin, you're going to see people start offering discounts to spend the Bitcoin, with you to incentivize that transaction, because you want the Bitcoin as much as I do. Well, if I want you to give me your Bitcoin voluntarily, I better give you a really good deal because I want to hold on to those Bitcoins just as much as you do. So I think we're going to see, like I said, Bitcoin Friday last year, you participated. You were selling the magazine last year, and there were only about 60 websites offering deals on that day. I think that's right. And this year, it's easily going to be twice as many websites. I think even more. We'll just have to wait and see. But I think the economy is only growing. The merchant processing companies like BitPay and Coinbase are reporting large amounts of volume of transactions happening and purchasing being done with Bitcoin. So it's only getting stronger, and we can look for good things to come in the coming years.
I saw that it's part of a whole different attitude, and it was very stark when I saw Russell Brand, that has a new magazine or something, Statesman or something, coming out, and it was titled Revolution. And on the cover, it had like a brain inside a light bulb. It's kind of like, this awareness. We just thought of something. And the BBC came out, and they're interviewing him in a hotel room. Russell Brand is, he's just a comedian, actor, thin, good-looking, bearded, dark-haired kind of. You see him in a lot of different movies. And get him to the Roxbury kind of guy. And what happened was they were challenging him because he didn't vote. And he goes, yeah, I don't vote. Is it voting seriously? You think that's not going to make the change? We've got a revolution coming. Revolution, revolution. Well, you're just an idiot. How are you going to make change? And he goes, hey, man, I'm not looking for your permission. I'm not looking for your sanction. I'm just taking it. We're just doing it. A revolution, the generation next thing. He just hammered on him, and the BBC freaked out. And I saw it. We put it up on Freedom's Phoenix. It was over at Daily Paul. I put that up, and I watched it twice, and I'm going, wow, they got to be freaking out. And what is one of the big main components of this has always been the store of wealth. It's always been the use of money. It's always been able to, they don't care, who does what, as long as they get their cut and you use their money. Well, Bitcoin bypasses that, and you can interface with silver and gold and even money. So the thing is that Bitcoin as a concept is not going to go away. And China may say, you know what the new world reserve currency is? Bitcoin, or another thing that we made up.
It's better. China would rather a world reserve currency that nobody controls than a world reserve currency that we control. Or the government controls, I should say.
Well, this is...
It's a big finger in the eye to the U.S. to say your world reserve currency is no longer king. We'd rather a level playing field than to let you control the game.
Yeah, this is going to be much wider than I think people realize. And we'll have a lot to talk about after Davi and Drew come this mid-month.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence. It's me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, hello, hello. We have an excellent guest for you, and we're going to find out all about what I want to know about Nobel Peace Prizes. Does it mean anything? And, you know, my Nobel Peace Prize winning president has, used more cruise missiles than yours. And I'm going, seriously. And then the Syrian thing, we're talking about, here comes the United Nations. They're getting involved, and they're going, we're going to make the deadline. We're going to get rid of all these bad, evil chemical weapons that Syria had and everything, and it's not a problem, and we don't got to go bomb them. But what happens here in the U.S.? Every congressman, that's got AIPAC in behind them, they get up and they say, yeah, but that doesn't stop us. We got to go whip ass on Iran, damn it. We were going to go through Syria. All roads lead through Damascus, go to Iran, but we're not going to get to do that. And Putin gets to be the good guy on this. How did the ex-KGB guy head of Russia get up and outdo and more peaceified than the, I got elected Obama for peace? How'd that happen? I got Nobel Peace Prize while I was sitting there bombing and droning people, and Putin outdid me. What the heck? We got to go bomb Iran. I mean, it's craziness. I want to know. So what we did is we were able to hook up with Frederick Heffermel, and hopefully he'll help me with the pronunciation of that. Now, he is born in 38, the boy's been around for a while, and he's a Norwegian jurist, a writer, a translator. He's been a lawyer for a long time and so on. But then this is what we want to talk about. He's author of the Nobel Peace Prize, What Nobel Really Wanted. Now, he's also been the president of a non-governmental organization, Norwegian Peace Council. So let's just get right to it. Frederick, help me out, man. I need to know what the Nobel Peace Prize represents now, how it works, how you get nominated, how you get picked, what kind of political shenanigans are going on. Because, if you look at the list of the people that for the Nobel Peace Prize been done, you kind of look over back in history and you go, what the heck is going on? Help explain it to me, sir.
That was a whole lot of questions. I can say the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize, does not exist any longer. There is no interest in what Nobel actually intended. And Nobel had a vision of peace. How to create it? He had a plan. His ideas 115 years ago were just those of the Norwegian parliament. So he trusted the Norwegian parliament would pick the right committee to select the winners. And for a while this functioned, but then came World War I, and then particularly World War II, where Norwegian politics changed. We became much more militaristic and believing in strong armaments and in NATO alliance and in U.S. Support of U.S. foreign policy. Therefore, the committee today is actually directly opposed to the idea of Nobel when he wrote his will. So it's become a whole, scam or a deception or a
fraud. Fraud. Nobel, the one thing that, as I remember the story, correct me if I'm wrong, they made a mistake and he read his own obituary. And he's going, hey, man, I'm not a death machine. I'm a good guy. I want to use my money for good and have my name be good. What a lot of people, he was the military-industrial complex of his day. I mean, he made dynamite or something, right? And now all of a sudden he's like, no, I want to be known for something else. It went well for a while, and now it's just been bastardized. I did not know it was a Norwegian thing.
Oh, yes. The will was written in Swedish. He was a Swedish national, but he had lived around the world. He was a man of the world who had business in, at that time, all over the world. And therefore, he was able to lift the perspective of how to create security in this world above the national level and look at what is serviceable for the world as a whole. What is a good system for the world as a whole? And he said that if we want security, we have to cooperate. We have to make international treaties. We have to have international institutions and rely on a civilized international society with, I'm sure, police and some common police forces, but not national competition and arms races and arms development, which has which is costing us absolutely enormous astronomic sums every year, and that affects human welfare and well-being. The money is being spent on killing us all instead of feeding us all.
Okay, now let's go ahead and talk about that. You know, Nobel. Now, this is the year was
1895.
Yeah, it was after the Civil War. I remember that. So 1895, where he's wanting to have an impact. He made a lot of money. It was TNT, right? I mean, as I recall, wasn't
yes.
it? Okay, so
yeah.
so he explosives and so on.
He invented dynamite.
So well, of course, it's used a lot in a lot of other things. I mean, you use it in mining. You use it to clear stumps. I mean, you do, you know, whatever. It's not necessarily bad. But, of course, it was associated with him bad. He probably made a bunch of money on the war thing. But, man, if he just stuck around a little bit longer, ooh, the big money. World War One and Two, yeehaw. Well, he's talking about we got to have some kind of, man, we got to keep these guys in check. You know, somebody, these guys, there's always waging war for I'm going to take over the planet and TNT is going to help. So I'm just like, we got to go down a different path. So was he a supporter of something like the United Nations? And has the United Nations, you know, how's that working out? You know, I mean, what's your view of the United Nations?
Okay. I think United Nations is an expression of something in the direction they got the Nobel Peace Prize in 2001, and I think this was one of the better prizes because it is about international cooperation for a common goal, common security for everyone on the planet. But the UN is very insufficient, and it is not being supported by member nations, and the member nations are completely disregarding their obligations. And among them, I think the U.S. is a main country to fail its obligations under the United Nations Charter.
But which is what? Money?
It is the Charter had as one overall the primary goal to end all wars. The primary obligation under the United Nations Charter is that member nations shall never lift arms against each other.
Yeah, how's that working out?
It's a ban. In Article 2.4 contains a ban on all military activity, on all military use of military force.
You know, but then they get into environmental stuff. Then they get into small arms treaties. Then they get into how they're going to regulate, you know, the water and the forest and whatever, and each individual. I mean, you might as well give up sovereignty, and it's this one world government kind of, it's just another level of they rule me thing. And I don't have a problem with cooperation between nations or even having a place to go. Any kind of centralization of power or even the legitimacy of individuals, like with the Nobel Peace Prize or the Nobel Prizes in general, it all becomes politicized. And, you know, the 800-pound gorilla, like, you know, is the United States, sitting there going, yeah, we have veto power and we want to do whatever we want to do because we can do it. And I'm going, you know, this is not the whatever the promise was has not been fulfilled. And I want to know why. You know, what capture got it? Who took it over? Who's really running the United Nations and the Nobel? And how's it being done? Well, who else are we going to ask other than Frederick Heffernbell?
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
Okay, Frederick, we'll be back in about 3 minutes. We have, it's at 20 after the hour we come back. Now, let's make some notes real quick. What are some of the things that you want to make sure we cover?
Oh, I think we should go now to this year's price because it's very illustrative. It's about chemical weapons, and I think you cannot just pick out one weapon and at a time. You have to change the whole system. You have to go about it in a very integrated and total way.
Okay.
And then we should go perhaps to the original idea of Nobel and. You told this story about his reading his obituary, but I think there is another part of his history in those years before he died, which is much more important in the understanding of the Peace Prize.
Okay, what year did he die?
In 1896.
Okay. So
1 year after the will.
1 year after what?
1 year after he wrote his will.
Okay, 1896, died 1 year after will. Now, how long was this will? Was it pretty detailed and had all kinds of everything for everybody?
Normally, you see it as one page, which is about the prizes and how they shall be awarded by the five different committees. But actually, that is just an extract. The actual length is 4 pages, and they contain a lot of provisions for people he had known during his life and servants and the family and so on.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to come back and I'm going to go.
We want mistress even.
I'm sorry? Oh, mistresses, yeah. I go, this year's prize, you know, what was the original idea? He died in 1896, a year after he did the will. And, it's just a few pages, 4 or 5 pages, and just one page really talks about the prizes and left for them to do whatever. So I'll go ahead and do that real quick, and then we'll go to what you want to talk about, which is the original idea. And how. Yeah. See, my thing is, this has been my deal, and, my audience already knows this. I go, you know, whenever you create an organization or a movement or a thing around a concept or idea, sooner or later the organization becomes more important than the reason you created it every single time. And the Nobel is the same thing. Whatever the reason they created it, doesn't matter anymore.
Yes, you are completely right. And but my point there, which I have developed in my book, is that the decline of the Nobel Peace Prize is the same as...
Here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're back, right back. We want to go to Frederick. Frederick, the one thing that you wanted to make sure that we talk about is you wanted to make sure... Oh, Donna, can you go get Donna? We got a video thing going on over here. You know, the one thing that I wanted to make sure that we talked about is the original idea of Nobel and what it was that he wanted to do. His whole thing, he read his obituary, so all of a sudden it's the next day, and he has, next year, he dies. So 1896, he wrote the will a year before. 1896, he dies. It's only 4 or 5 pages, and in one page he defined and described what here's a chunk of money, you guys do it for this and that, and we'll get into the details of that. And he had an original idea, and I'm wondering how close we are to that, because we call it Steiger's Law here, and the whole thing is that whenever you get any organization or thing around any idea, concept, or goal, sooner or later the concept, is lost. The movement is lost, the reason is lost, and the only thing the organization does is perpetuate the organization. And I can see when you're starting to give, the people that get in these different prizes, certainly the political one with the peace thing, I'm going, man, who cares? Hell, I wouldn't want it. You know, I've had guys on the show, a bunch of different people that have been nominated for it and so on, and you see who got it and they didn't. You're going, they're just trying to elevate the credibility of the Nobel Peace Prize by all these great guys that they nominate, but they give it to the biggest scumbag. And I'm going, there is something politicized going on here, and I want you to, you know, let's start off with what are the prizes. I think it was like five or something areas. What are the prizes? And then tell me about the history of the Nobel Peace Prize and how it's been bastardized. Help me out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right that the big risk of deterioration over time, and that is particularly so in the field where Nobel was when he wrote his will. It was a will against militarism. It was a will for a military-free world. And there are many movements and organizations like Peace Research Institutes or the Carnegie Endowment for Peace had the same roots as the Nobel Peace Prize. They had the same origin, but as I write in my book, there is a tendency that all attempts at challenging the military dominance in the world politics is bound to, because the military is such a strong military political factor in all countries, that all attempts to challenge that power is bound to not last very over time, give in over time. But the history about his reading, Nobel reading his obituary as a war man and then now wanting to do something for peace, I don't think that's exactly right. He made five prizes, and I think four of them had been in preparation for some time. The Peace Prize came in the end, I think. It's perhaps the most important of the prizes. It resulted from his party. He was a member of the peace associations of the time, particularly one of the Austrian Countess Bertha von Suttner, who was a writer of the greatest bestseller of the period, the Lay Down Your Arms. And Nobel said, this is a wonderful book. There are, I think, 2,000 languages in the world, and your fine book should be translated into all of them. So this is actually the Lay Down Your Arms Prize. And Bertha von Suttner was essential, and her ideas is the ideas that the Nobel Committee in Norway, appointed by the Norwegian Parliament, has a mandate to promote. But since they are actually dead opposed to the ideas, they don't care for this kind of peace and security thinking at all. They have the opposite view. They are the most unsuited people at all you could find who sit on the committee.
Okay, let's talk about this, though. The prizes that he had before are already formulated in his head. He's influenced by the obituary he does, so he adds the Nobel Peace Prize, which came the one that was most notable. And I'm going, okay, so his whole concept is to try to emphasize and support peace. And I find it very interesting now how it's actually done. Go ahead and walk us through that process. Who gets nominated, how they get nominated, how they get selected. And I remember, God, wasn't it Snowden got nominated by somebody somehow? How'd that go over?
Well, not anyone can nominate. There is a strict list of who can nominate, but all parliamentarians everywhere in the world are among those entitled to nominate. And then some professors of history, law, political science, international affairs, and so on, and former laureates, etc. There are some groups who are entitled to nominate and by February 1 each year. And then there is a whole process for the trimming or screening of the candidates and trimming them down. But you say the prize is for peace, but actually it's not for peace. It's for a special way of creating peace. And
peace
this is
strength.
Very strong.
If you got a big giant gun and you're the guy in the 800-pound gorilla that all you survey, gosh darn it, you're keeping the peace with your big stick, and we're going to give you the prize. I mean, you know, where's the other one? I mean, who are the other people? You know, I'm not, you know, tell us about Edward Snowden. When he did the NSA thing, or you got Assange, WikiLeaks, or you got, you know, some of these other guys that are, you know, giving a finger to the man, and their names come up for this. Explain to me how it's, the names that we get say, okay, here are the finalists. I mean, how, is there a limit? Is it five? Is it six? And then who votes to make the final cut? I want to know who lobbied and got Barack Obama his Nobel Peace Prize. That's what I want to know. I want to know how in the hell that happened, you know? So, you know, help me out.
But you must realize that this committee is shrouded in total secrecy. They don't. They are not even permitted to keep records of any discussions, or it's just a record of who was. They record, this year we decided to give the prize to so-and-so. There is no information about this, and after 50 years, it is possible to get the names of who was nominated. So now we can know who were nominated up to 1963 at this point. But I was able, when I wrote my book, to get a peeking hole, or what you call it, look into the work in the committee, because I found the diaries of one of the former chairs, one who has been sitting longest on the committee.
Oh, that's going to be a good thing. We come back. We're going into break for a few minutes. We'll be right back. And we have, we want to get in the diary of the guys. Frederick Heffermel, Nobel Peace Prize, telling us all about the Nobels and how that worked. I'm looking forward to learning some more, because we need to understand how this is done. Should we even pay any attention to them at all? Or has the meaning been lost? Okay, what we'll do when we come back, we'll be back at 33 after. So when we come back, I want to go, I'm hoping to get a contemporary example, but I mean, if we can get a biography, or I mean, memoirs of someone, that's, you know, just as good. So I need to know how many people make the final decision. There's somebody voting, doing slips of paper, secret ballot, open ballot, raising hands, something. You know, how many, who is in that group that makes that decision?
Well, it's five persons appointed by the Norwegian Parliament.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and let's go ahead and do that when we come back. And then
I hold many meetings during the year. One meeting in the course of February, where they take a look at the list and pick around 30, 35 names for further scrutiny.
Okay. Let's go ahead and go through that process. That's what I'm interested in. And then, of course, we can get into, you know, the, you know, in the past and history and how they've done various different things. But this is, you know, I find this fascinating. This is the first time that we've had an opportunity to get in on something like this. So for me, so I'm, you know, the fact that you've written a book about it. So I, you know, want to know all about. But the thing, you still haven't answered my question. How in the hell did Obama, you know, get, you know, what is the, who are the five guys? You have a list of who those guys were and where they came from and what influences they had?
No, I mean, it's secret.
So you don't even know who the guys are that make the decision? You don't know the individuals that make the decision, those five guys?
Oh,
you don't?
Yes. No. We know them. They are rank and file old political hacks in Norway, representing Norwegian, they are selected by the Norwegian parties, the main parties.
Okay, so how are they doing financially? They got their own yachts and stuff? I mean, how are they doing? See, I'm wondering if they get paid for this, or they get paid off for doing this kind of stuff.
I don't think there is any important financial remuneration, but they like to shine in the limelight of the world cameras.
All right. This is where I'm going when we come back. Okay, Frederick?
Okay.
All right. Thanks, man. We'll be right back.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with a chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone.
and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
No wrong, no right. I'm gonna tell you there's no black and no white. No blood, no stain. All we need is one worldwide vision.
Yeah, one worldwide vision. We got one world, one vision, one something. Is that the best way to go? Is that how we should do it? I don't know, man. And they got a mechanism for it. You know, and however, whatever the reason and how they wanted to start it and what the benefit was, I don't know. But we're going to find out from Frederick Heffermel. You know, Frederick, am I saying that right? Am I getting your name correct?
Heffermel is fine.
Heffermel. I'm just like a native Norwegian. Okay. So what happens is you have five guys are the ones that make this decision. Now, you're talking about the process, you know, nomination from somebody and everybody, and I got a, you know, a flash drive or a CD or a piece of paper and a post-it that said this guy should, and we looked and whatever, and it eventually comes down to five guys. Now, these five guys, are they the same for all the prizes, or you have different five guys for, like, you know, in science or something like that? And then, you know, the Nobel, that's at least five guys, and do we know who they are? Are they, you can find them in the phone book. How's that work?
Oh, yes. Well, there are five prizes established by Nobel, and the prize for medical efforts is awarded by the Caroline Hospital in Stockholm, and the science prizes by the Swedish Academy of Sciences, the literature prize by the Swedish Academy of Literature and Letters. And then there is a very strong peculiarity that the Peace Prize, or as Nobel called it, the prize for the champions of peace, the peace movement, is awarded by the Norwegian Parliament, not by the Parliament itself, but the Nobel wanted the Norwegian Parliament to appoint a committee of five to select the winner each year.
Okay, from their own ranks? I mean, these are parliamentarians that they do, or they go out and pick, you know, Fred on the corner and be, or is it from themselves they're making these five selections?
I think it's very clear that when Nobel asked the Norwegian Parliament to help him, it was because the Norwegian Parliament was a leader in the peace movement efforts of the time, in supporting the peace ideas that Nobel wished to support by the will, which was peace and security through global cooperation on global disarmament. That means a global peace order or plan.
Obama brought the same cabinet, I mean, a lot, you know, he kept, you know, the very Secretary of Defense of Bush's cabinet, he brought him with him, and they never stopped the bombings. I mean, you know, I'm going, how did that happen?
Oh yes, it happens the Nobel expected the Parliament to appoint people who supported his peace idea. But over time, the Norwegian Parliament has changed from its ideas then, and they have the completely different view. They believe in strong armaments and in NATO and in support of U.S. And that is the main characteristic of our line from the Nobel Committee, is to pick people from the United States and support American ideas and American politicians. That is the reason why they chose Obama, is, of course, the Norwegian politicians and their subservience to America, to U.S.
Okay, now the five people that made this selection, you know, they don't say what the vote was. It could have been 3-2, 5-0, whatever. But so they keep that kind of secret. I mean, have these people been criticized in your own media? I mean, people talk to them. Do they shun them at the grocery store? I mean, you know, how do these five guys react to the criticism?
Well, they are politicians. Instead of the Parliament should pick peace people or people in favor of Nobel's idea, but they take the seats for themselves, which is results in the committee of people awarding a disarmament prize who are for military strengths and forth and alliances and so on. So they are, have the direct opposite view of the prize they are going to award, which resulted in the prize for Obama, which resulted in the prize for the European Union last year, where the European leaders all came to Oslo, and then they hasted over to Brussels 2 days later to sign a treaty or a new agreement between the European nations on strengthening their military cooperation and their military research and everything, harmonizing and increasing Europe's military strength. So it was kind of absurd or, well, we could use verse.
Stupid, fraud, stupid, evil. Okay, stupid, evil. Has there been a competition, you know, with the Nobel? I mean, it's so bastardized now, it's worthless. It means nothing. I mean, it gives you your name in the paper and a couple hundred thousand dollars or something. But, I mean, other than that, it's just, is there competition? Is there the, you know, the World Peace Prize of, you know, Fred, some homeless guy in San Francisco says, I give out the prize and it has more credibility? Is there competition for the Nobels?
Well, there is a setup in Sweden which hands out the Right Livelihood Award. And I think the people they have picked relating to peace, they pick a whole range of different winners. But it's often it's a much better peace prize than the Nobel.
It is to laugh. And what happens with the internet? Tell me this. You have Generation Next, these younger guys that get their information not because the New York Times said something, but because they, you know, get peer reviewed by all their buddies and friends and contacts on, you know, the internet, you know, Facebook, their email, Twitter, kind of that they get their news from somewhere else. And the second within a minute, 60 seconds after they make some announcement of some warmonger, they go, man, it's all over. And next generation say, look at what these stupid people did again. Does that have an impact on them at all, or do they even care?
No, I have written this book in the U.S. in 2010. It was translated into Chinese, Swedish, Finnish, and just came out in Spanish. And it's coming in Russian.
The Nobel Peace Prize, wanted. Okay, the title of your book.
Yeah. And I've written thousands of articles, and they just ignore them. They just pretend I don't exist. They never respond to any of my arguments. So this is power, and therefore my book in English, what Nobel really wanted. It contains a study of how politics operate when people in power in the modern democracy want to exercise power in undue power or misuse power, and the tools that they are using for that purpose. Where I think their debate technique is silence, primarily silence, but also nonsense at times. Nonsense.
When we come back after this break, this is the one thing that I'm going to focus on. Is there ever a time that you're going to have any kind of a consolidation of effort or power or a prize or a committee or a group that it's not going to get captured by the very bad guys that, you know, want to get their name? You know, oh, I'm a peace guy. You know how I know it? Because they awarded me the prize. You know how they awarded me the prize? I was the guy that awarded the prize. It may have took us a generation or a couple of decades, but now we're in charge and we vote us and we are the good guys. Well, now that the media and so on has, you know, democratized and got horizontal and out through the planet out there, we decide. You know, did Dr. Ron Paul ever even get mentioned? Maybe not.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Okay, when we come back, I want to talk about the, that very issue that I just went into the break with. You know, are you starting to get to where there's a consensus, you know, among the critics of what's happened and even yourself, that these kind of organizations that label something and it's just a bunch of the same neocon warmongering going around giving each other pats on the back and prizes? I mean, yeah. I mean, and it means nothing. So what does? I mean, is there some kind of global solution that you're looking for? Because this generation next, they're like, no. And that brings up this phenomenon, the Ron Paul Lovelution that went on here. I don't know if you were familiar with what happened to Ron Paul in 08 and 12, but it was worldwide. I mean, people are like, yeah, the peace guy, I vote that. You know, yeah. If you're going to vote at all. And then what about national sovereignty and how much should the UN have the control on whatever? And what about, you know, going in and, you know, controlling lands or small arms treaties or got to disarm people and all that kind of, I mean, you know, where do you stop?
I think actually the state system is a we have a very dysfunctional world. We have arms races that consume our wealth and they destroy our nations. And the U.S. International presence is getting it lots of friends. Of course, it gets some oil and some resources and some but I think also the American and Americans would be served by seeing that we are on a very small globe and we are all in it together, and people all over the world would benefit by setting aside that corporate powers that are bullying us around all the time.
All right. Well, we're going to try and find out the younger generation have a different solution. They're just like, I break with thee, and I don't like government in general. It would be anarchy. All right, here we go.
LRN.FM into more ears. Visit promote.lrn.fm for a free bumper sticker, flyers, banners, graphics, and more. Promote.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? Wish our voices can be heard. Just want to speak louder.
Peace declare an individual. We have from Oslo, Norway, live via video Skype, Frederick Heffermel. He wrote the book, the Nobel Peace Prize. What Nobel really wanted. And, you know, he's advocating that what he really wanted is he wanted to, you know, kind of, you know, let's have some peace as a prize. I mean, for peace. And then we get what we call here in America, regulatory capture. I mean, you know, the very bad guys that you're trying to, you know, emphasize not is bad and they're not good. Well, what happens? They get in charge of the, you know, the labeling. They go, you know what? We put a label. We're We're organic. You know, we're the good guys now. It's organic food. It's organically grown GMO, you know? So I'm just like, this is what's happening. One real quick question, though, Frederick. I want to know, what is all the prizes? You know, name off each of the prizes that are given by Nobel, the prize.
The prize for medicine, for physics, chemistry, for literature, and then for peace.
You know, the one thing that's interesting.
Just a second. Not for peace, but for the champions of peace. Those who work for a cooperation among all nations on abolishing military forces and stop the arms races.
What is it for the. Just real quick, an aside on the literature one, what language is submitted? That's. I mean, does it have to be translated in Norwegian or something? I mean, you know what? How do they do that?
I don't know.
It's secret.
They awarded in Sweden, and they are awarding it for writers from China, from Poland, from all the world's languages. So they, of course, they have some system for being able to detect the great writers around the world. There are nominations.
Okay,
this writer should be chosen.
Let's talk about something. I mean, you know, here in the United States, the anti-war movement is, you know, what happened to that? I mean, it comes, it goes. It's one of the only consistent people that have been anti-war have been the, you know, the small government people, you know, or the libertarians or the anarchists, or we don't like government in general because they always want to go to war with somebody. And you had a champion of that for decades, and certainly had an enormous impact on the planet, and sure as heck here in the United States, Dr. Ron Paul, that ran for president in 08 against Obama when he was running for the Republican nomination. He was the last guy to go out before they went to the convention. Same thing in 12. Had an enormous following of Generation X, these young people. And I'm wondering why his name wasn't even ever put and considered and kind of on the list. You know, I mean, that is like, hell no. And I had Military Families Against Freedom of Religion Foundation kind of stuff. You know, Military Religious Freedom guy. I can't remember his name. Weinstein.
We don't know whether Ron Paul was on the list and what evaluation and how close he came to winning because it's all secret. We have another fine American politician, Dennis Kucinich, I think, who has very fine peace ideas.
So this is, it's just, I'm wondering if your book is really, you know, it's not like to fix the Nobel, it's just to say, out of hell with it, ignore it. I mean, are you endorsing the Nobel Prizes or certainly the Peace Prize? It just needs to be done better?
I'm saying that they are all wrong. They are not, there is no Nobel Prize any longer because the Nobel has been completely forgotten and his idea of how to create peace was the vital thing in the bill. And interested in his ideas on how to create peace by disarmament. They are interested in a regular foreign policy based on militarism. They are all in favor of that in committee. And they appoint U.S. People who have been in the White House have a very good chance of getting the Nobel.
Oh, man.
I wrote a special chapter on the prize for Obama. He came to Oslo and he gave a fantastic speech, perhaps one of the best which were held on Norwegian soil ever. And it was so such a delusion or
deception.
It sounded fine, but in my book I have analyzed it for 16 pages, and I think it would be very interesting to an American audience to really see this American official foreign policy disseminated or analyzed and criticized in the way I do when I pick out the of the speech for Obama.
The Nobel Peace Prize, what Nobel really wanted, and in there, 16 pages of criticism of what Barack Obama actually said and what he actually did. And I'm going, okay, you know, that would definitely be of interest. And while you're on, and I'm so glad that we got hold of you, because I really wanted to understand that we've learned a lot. You know, I mean, okay, so Nobel created these prizes, but I did not know that he put it in the hands of the Norwegian parliament to select the committees to do it, and then it's all secret. Now, there are prizes, too. It's gone up in value. If I win a Nobel, I get some money or something, don't I?
Oh, yes. You get $1 million plus $250,000.
Okay, I'm sorry. What, about $250,000, you said?
Yeah, $1 million.
Okay, so $1.25 million. All right, so yeah. It's worth getting, I guess. But it's just another control mechanism, another lie, another deception, another. And thanks to Frederick, he's trying to, you know, kind of blow the lid on this thing. How much press are you getting on your criticisms in your book? Are you getting interviews around the world, or people, you know, seeking you out and want to know what you had to say?
Oh yes, I get an enormous coverage. On the day when the prizes are announced, particularly when the EU prize was announced last year, I was at a small island outside Sicily, and there came TV crews came all from Russia to Italy and out on that small island outside Sicily. So, I had 35 interviews with all the big stations all over the world, Australia, Canada, US, Norway, Sweden, France, etc.
So we're very fortunate.
But the point is that they just ignore it. They pretend this is not being, this criticism they just ignore.
You know, it's becoming, are you getting some kind of a optimistic view? Are you seeing some real change when you have young people that have access to so much information amongst themselves as peers, and they're going, yep, what he said. You know, this thing is so totally, and you almost want to give the Norwegian parliament and the Peace Prize giver guys a big giant wet kiss for giving the Nobel to Barack Hussein Obama that, you know, keeps Obama and everybody. And you're going, wow, that man, you really highlighted this exactly what Frederick had to say. Thank you very much. And this next generation sees it for what it is. Do you have any kind of, you know, hope from that? Are you experiencing them starting to express themselves and seeing how little the Nobel Prize really means now? Is that giving you any kind of hope?
Well, I would say, I should tell you that after 4 years, last year, I got an order from the Swedish public authority, state government authority on foundations, saying that they have to follow the will. They have to respect the intentions of Nobel. And the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize, was transferred. The responsibility was transferred to the Swedes. And that has been completely by the press in Norway and Sweden, even if it should be very, very newsworthy.
Oh, are you kidding me? So they changed from the Nobel Peace Prize that had been for a long time in the hands of the politician to Norway. It went, hey, you guys violated the will. It's going now. It's just Swedish that has it.
Yeah, well, it's the Swedish have now the final responsibility. The Nobel Foundation in Stockholm is responsible for correct awarding of the Nobel Prize.
Oh, well, that's good news. There's a change. There's a shift. That's news. We should report on that, you think?
Yes.
All right, well, hold on for a second. I want to talk to you. We'll see if we can actually report on that, because I want to get that information up. I did not know this. And he waited till the end of the show to tell me. I got 5 billion more questions, you know. Well, hopefully they'll keep you online here for a future show. And I know you'll have everybody and their grandmother across the planet want to talk to you. But hopefully you'll find some time for us when this comes around again that we can. And maybe after the hoopla all settles down a little bit, and we'll talk about how the rest of the world is reporting on the very things that you're bringing up that's been ignored for a long time. Thanks for listening.
Free Talk Live.
Okay. One thing that I want to do is, Donna, hopefully you remember us, and we'll get you back on in the future. But this is important. I want to, where would I go to find this kind of information? What I'm, when you say I would search on Google or something, Nobel Peace Prize goes to Sweden or something. What am I searching for?
Well, you will find very little about it. You will find it on the website of the County Board of Stockholm, which is in charge of foundations, control of foundations and how they are managed. And then you will find it on the website I am managing, which is called NobelWill.org.
Okay, NobelWill.org.
There is a references to the Swedish on the Swedish material is there, and you see, it was very strange. They gave me all I wanted, and the decision in favor, but the public authority, instead of enforcing the law, they said that everything was fine. I mean, it meaning. They said in the order, they said that the Nobel Foundation has to oversee the Norwegians and make sure they are following the will. But in the press release, they said that they had dismissed the case.
Okay. I'm sorry, what? They dismissed what?
They dismissed the case from further. They would not go... They would just give this reminder of respecting the law, and they decided that the Swedes are in charge.
Okay, so they dismissed a challenge from the Norwegian people. Okay. All right, yeah. So here we go. Stockholm, said, I got it here. Stockholm Administrative Board decision, March 21, 12, blah, blah, blah. Questions. Compliance with purpose of the Nobel Foundation decision. The county board decides to dismiss the case from further handling. Summary of the case. On January 3rd, the county board requested Nobel Foundation to clarify its views on information from Frederick Heffermau regarding deviations of the Nobel, blah, blah, blah. The Nobel Foundation responded to the March 8th considerations. See, I'm looking for, you know, what was they did. Okay, what did the decision mean? Okay. The Swedish Foundation Authority explained the decision orally in a meeting with Nobel historian, and the next day Mel then submitted his explanations and yada, yada, yada. See, what I'm trying to find out here is somewhere in here it's going to say, okay, it went from Norwegian parliament to Sweden. Now, where does it say that?
The thing is, they had been awarding this will for around 100 years and forgotten the will completely until I said that there is a will here. You have to take this seriously. And then this Swedish order said, because they did not change their ways in any way, the Swedish authority said, you have to follow the intention of Nobel as expressed in the will. And they also said, the Norwegians are not correct. I say they are in charge, and they should not take orders from anyone. They said the Swedish Foundation is in charge, and they shall. That's their responsibility that the prizes go to the right persons.
Okay, did they have some kind of control of the money? Because if the Norwegians had the money, they'd say, "Bite me! We can do whatever the hell we want."
The Swedish Foundation has the money. So the Norwegian never see the money. They just pick the winner.
Okay. So that, see, I'm wondering how the Swedish go and say, you know, you don't get to do it anymore. And they go, yeah, we can. No, you can't. Yeah, we can. No, you can't. Oh, by the way, we got the money and we'll award it. And they go, okay. Damn it.
Last year, we had four Nobel laureates, among them Desmond Tutu, Pérez Esquil and Mairead McGuire and the International Peace Bureau, who protested and said that the Swedish Foundation was not entitled to pay out the money to the European Union. And they did not care at all. They just went along. But this cannot – they are under increasing pressure, and we will create more trouble for them, I can tell you.
Oh, I bet you're not on their Christmas card list, are you?
No.
Okay. All right. I haven't. You know, I wish I'd known this. You know, this part right here that it went the. So I mean, I got the best part in the last 2 minutes. I go. You know, yeah. I could have spent the whole hour just on this. You know. So we'll have. Yeah.
But you can take a new hour later.
You know, let's do that, Donna. Go ahead and let's go a couple of weeks. And is there another step in the Nobel Peace? When is it awarded? What did you say? February?
No. It's a deadline for nominations is February 1. Then there is a process, and there's an announcement second Friday of October is the winner announced.
Okay, is a nomination done? I want to, Dr. Ron Paul. I want him in there. How I do it?
Okay, I have a description. You just hand in the name and some reasons and some documentations in favor of the nominee.
To who? To whom? Who do I give it to?
You send it to the Norwegian Nobel Committee. But you have to be a parliamentarian or a professor of certain field in certain fields, a former Nobel Prize winner, or in charge of a peace research or foreign affairs institute or something like that.
All right. Well, I think I can find one. All right. So we'll go ahead.
Sure.
All right. We'll work on that because I want to. Because see, my thing
my book contains. And a recipe on, I think, 3 or 4 pages on how to nominate for the prize.
Excellent. Okay, that's what we'll do. See, my thing is that it doesn't matter if Dr. Paul gets it or not. If we make a big – which we can. We'll make a big giant woohoo here in America, all right?
Yeah.
The revolutionaries and so on, you know, here we're in the middle of – we're going to kick some ass. So we do that, and we'll go, all right, fine. Just like for president, we go, fine. Pick whoever the freak you want. Go ahead, but it better be better than this, okay? And when it's not, we go, see. You know, you see my point? So that's what he's so clearly, you know, head and shoulders above whatever. So we're going to have some fun. We'll work on it, and we'll use your book. So what we'll go ahead and do, I'm going to put you with Donna. Well, go ahead and give me a time because you're on Skype.
Yeah.
You know, I want to do, let's do it. Can you do 2 hours? You know, are you able to do that?
Okay, well,
it goes by pretty fast.
So I have many plans, which not least about what we are going to do as next steps in our campaign to revolt against the present awarders.
I want to help.
We need to change the committee.
Okay, let me bring this up, and you'll understand. Did you even, American politics, were you aware of this Ron Paul revolution thing that went on in 08 and 12, that he was up there, you know, being the peace guy? I mean, did that even cross your radar screen?
Oh, I'm sure, but, you know, this is part of the information age that we get so much information that it rolls past. And I know the name Ron Paul.
Okay, so what we're going to do,
I'm sure, yeah.
We're involved, you know. We have to kind of, you know a lot of the people involved in this, and we can get, you know, a little bit of, you know, just a, you know, oh, just to help you along here, and you'll get a lot more help from here than I think you realize. Okay, so what we'll go ahead and do is November 18th is a Friday. And I'd like to schedule you, and we'll get the times right and make sure you understand, because we just the show ended at the top of this hour. But the thing is that by then the time zones change, right, Donna? You know, because okay, Donna will coordinate this for you. Friday, November 18th. Can you mark that down around this time that you have that at least an hour? And we could probably go 2 hours on this, because by that time, I will have already dissected your 4 pages on how we're going to do and be a butthead about it. And it'll be a comparison of a peace person, the love-olution, you know, the love-olution that we have. Send him the artwork for the Ron Paul love-olution. He kind of gets an idea. And look in the Banksy and all. It was an enormous impact here on Generation Next. And it was just when after the 08 campaign and Obama got the peace prize and then he keeps bombing everybody, it pissed off Generation Next here in this in this country. It was like, and they're looking to channel an effort that would go towards highlighting how freaking stupid this thing is, that they better pick Ron Paul to give any credibility to themselves, or they got to come up with somebody better, which they won't, and they'll do whatever they need, and we'll be helping you showing how stupid this thing is. See, you see my point?
What's very important is to understand that it's been a very big shift over the last, I think, 2 decades of where the militarism has taken a much stronger hold than it had. So up to 25 years ago, 20 years ago, there was an international international movement among nations for general and complete disarmament, and that is even included in one of the biggest international treaties existing, on a treaty of 1968 on the nuclear disarmament. It contains this clause on general and complete disarmament. And since then, the military has become a much more stronger influence in international affairs.
Because you have it centralized, you know, award-given politician, Norwegian, even the Swedish, whatever the hell. So the military-industrial, we want to kick everybody's butt and cause war and make a bunch of money, is what they did, is they said, you know what, we just need to be in charge of this Nobel Committee. We need to be in charge of this government. We need to be in charge of this thing and that thing. And so they did. And whenever you create these organizations, of course the bad guys are going to get in charge of them, because that's why they're there, to promote who's the peace guy. And they get to, oh, we get to be on this committee and decide who the peace guy is? Okay, we're in charge of that committee. And I'm going, no, it's the people. And it's the people around the planet. And because of the internet, they, for the first time, have the opportunity to have, you know, you archived, coming on, talking to people, making sure they read your book, using the mechanism and the criticism that you have as a weapon for them, highlighting how much crap this thing is. And I'm, and you're trying to reinstitute the real original meaning, which is, you know, laudable, but it, you're still wanting to collectivize in some, you know, body that wants to do it. And I, that's the problem right there. The United Nations, Nobel Peace, all this stuff. It's the people. And for the first time in human history, we have just a, the court of public opinion has value now, immediate value.
Yeah, I think you have a very valid point there. And the, but I also see that my battery is almost expired.
Thank you for spending the time. Thank you for spending this extra time. Now, Donna said the best time would be November 8th. So mark that down, November 8th, correct? November 8th. Okay, so it'll be, that's a Friday, November 8th, and we'll go ahead, and Donna will be in contact with you and schedule you to get at least one. I can go easy 2 hours with this new information here. Because
I am in a very busy period right there. I'm turning 75 and around those days and so on. But I'll check my calendar.
Okay, we'll get Donna to work it out with you, okay? And we'll get there, because I want to, you know, because I think you'll... you'll be surprised. Donna will send you some links and send you some stuff and some artwork and things that, so you kind of understand what we represent here, you know, how much influence we can have on this very issue to help you.
That's great. But I wondered, I tried to check your website, and you have mentioned the concept of philosophy of liberty, or liberty. And I cannot find this defined or described exactly what this is.
Donna, go ahead and make sure you send them about us, this section. See, we have the, we have a magazine, a newspaper, a website, a radio show, a video. I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot there. And the magazine, you know, you can send them the edition, the PDF, the edition of the anti-war edition on Freedom's Phoenix. You know, go ahead and do that, and he'll understand our perspective. But so there's a lot going. We'll get to know each other, because I want to help you in this. You know, we've been following this for years. And then I got more information from you in 1 hour than I ever got from everybody and anything. And gone, what the hell? So, you know, now I understand a lot more and how we can go kick butt and help you.
And we didn't get back to the diary.
Oh! Yeah, mark on. Here, let me mark it on here. Diary.
Yeah.
See, there's an hour right there. See, we need 2 hours.
Yeah.
Hey, okay. Thanks for spending time with me, sir. Yeah, we'll look forward to talking to you again. So just coordinate with Donna. She'll get all taken care of.
Very good.
All right. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.